Black men in particular, are multiple times more likely to be killed at the hands of a police officer. Black unarmed men. That is why I am proposing what we do around requiring accountability and consequence for police officers who break the rules and break the law. It is why I am proposing the Racial Disparities Act.
Welcome to a special edition of the Dear Culture podcast, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your host, Natasha S. Alford, VP of Digital Content at The Griot. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, what can we do to make sure that historic change comes this presidential election? In this extra special episode, myself, our CEO, Byron Allen, and Vice Presidential candidate Kamala Harris discuss public health disparities in America, her historical vice presidential nomination for the Democratic National Party, and legislation to protect Americans' right to vote. Senator Kamala Harris prioritized Black media outlets and journalists in her first week as VP nominee. Our interviews are being cited and adding value to the national political dialogue, as they should. Diversity is about more than representation. We, Black media, make real contributions. Our conversation with VP nominee Senator Kamala Harris has gone viral and was picked up by CNN and several other news outlets. So let's have a listen.
Well, first of all, Senator Harris, it's great to see you. Let me just get this on the record. I cannot wait to see you in the White House running things. That's one of my missions in life. I have that on my absolute to-do list. Listen, it's easy. Any schmuck can put a man in the White House. It takes a real man to help put a woman in the White House. So I'm telling you right now, that is on my list. First of all, I want to thank you for being very supportive of helping me and others defend our civil rights in the United States Supreme Court, and in particular, defending the Civil Rights Act of 1866, Section 1981. You were gracious enough and courageous enough, and you brought your unbelievable intellectual capital to help draft an amicus brief, a friend of the court, and help to get 12 members of Congress, including yourself, to defend the very first original Civil Rights Act in America. And I want to thank you for that. And a lot of people don't know you did that. And I really want America to know that, especially Black America, to know what you did to defend our civil rights in the United States Supreme Court. Now, unfortunately, we didn't get a great ruling. They voted against us 9-0. And what I would like to do is to say to you, I'm willing to invest enormous resources, and I would like to work with you to have Congress draft legislation so that we can change that but-for standard, which is the higher standard, impossible standard, to use this civil rights, and for us to work with Congress to draft legislation to bring it to the lower standard, the motivating factor. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you are willing to do to help us achieve? Because Congress can overturn the Supreme Court.
I definitely look forward to continuing our work together. So thank you for that.
Okay. And is that something you feel is possible and you would like to invest time and energy into?
I mean, well, let's take a look at it and see also what's the history of legislation out of the Senate on that issue. I'd be interested to know. You may know, but I'd be interested to know what that is.
Yes.
Absolutely. Let's work on it together.
You have the power to reverse the Supreme Court decision. And it has happened a number of times, because when they hit me with the loss, I eventually said, well, what are we going to do now to overturn it? And they said, this is a pathway. So we would love your support on that.
Thank you, Byron. And thank you for all that you do. Thank you.
Oh, no, you're the best. Thank you. I know Natasha has a number of things she wants to chat with you about. Go for it, Natasha.
Well, you know, this is just such a critical moment for all of us. And so, Senator Harris, before we talk about this groundbreaking bill around COVID-19 and anti-racism, I just want to ask you, as a senator, one who occupies a historic position, right? Because there are Black women senators, you're holding it down right now. How crucial?
There's only one. There's only one of us.
You are.
You are a unicorn.
No, but actually, that's the point, isn't it? No, where I come from, there are a lot of me's, and it's a shame that I am the only Black woman in the United States Senate, and only in the history of the United States Senate, only the second one ever in the history.
Yes.
The point that I like to make is, no, I come with people. There are a lot of us.
Yes.
And so people need to understand that and look around and see that when we talk about a democracy and a representative government, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so
you're on Mosley Brown. Yes.
Exactly. And so because of this unique position that you occupy, just how crucial do you think this moment is for you in terms of advancing a particular agenda that will uplift your community?
Well, I have always felt a profound sense of responsibility to honor the shoulders upon which I stand and to pave a path for those who will follow. You know, my mother used to have many sayings. One of them, she'd say, calmly, you may be the first to do many things. Make sure you're not the last. And so I do think of my role in that capacity. But let's just talk about where we are at this moment in time. We're in our country. We're in the midst of three crises, right? We've got this public health crisis, this pandemic, which has killed over 130,000 people and disproportionately impacted Black and Brown people. In fact, African Americans and Latinos are three times as likely to contract coronavirus, COVID-19, and twice as likely to die from it. When we look at the public health impact, knowing that African Americans have higher rates of asthma, 20% higher, 40% higher to have high blood pressure, Black women three times more likely to have lupus than white women. And we know that pre-existing health conditions have a huge impact on who is vulnerable to this virus and who will be then at risk of harm, if not death, right? So there's the public health crisis that we're in the midst of that is disproportionately impacting Black people in America. There is the economic crisis that has resulted from the public health crisis, where we're looking at our small businesses, our minority-owned businesses, and this is why I'm focused, Ayanna Pressley from Massachusetts, on what we need to do to save the business down the street, right? The barbershop, the beauty salon, the flower shop, knowing that that PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, that 90% of minority and women-owned businesses did not benefit from it. And so what we need to do around the economic crisis and address that in a way that lifts people up. I'm also proposing that we have continuous payments for folks as opposed to that one-time check to help them get through this epidemic. I'm proposing that we stay and that there be a suspension of credit card fees and a reporting to credit agencies because people are going to be late paying their bills and it will damage their credit history for their lifetime. And if we want them to get back up on their feet, let's understand where they are right now, not report those things so that they have bad credit for the rest of their life. And then we're talking about a recognition that thankfully so many in America are realizing that we have known our entire lives, which is about the systemic racism in America and how that has impacted, in particular, Black people in America. And most recently, talking about it in relation to what needs to be accountability and consequence for bad police. And so together with Cory Booker, my brother in the Senate, we are proposing the Justice and Policing Act with a lot of Democratic senators and then the Congressional Black Caucus, our colleagues there in the House leadership with the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act and saying that there needs to be a ban on no-knock warrants in drug cases because Breonna Taylor would be alive today if there were. Saying there needs to be a ban on chokeholds and carotid holds because George Floyd would be alive today if there were. These are the things we're doing and I feel a great sense of responsibility
as
the only Black woman in the United States Senate to ensure that all of those people who lifted me up so I could be in this place, that their voices are in that room with me every day of the week.
And we know we have a lot of Americans that are food insecure, a lot of Americans.
Yes.
And I've been working with Feeding America. And one of the big problems is SNAP. And SNAP is not properly funded.
No,
I believe that every American should have access to SNAP and we should have at least $20 to $30 a day. So you can take that debit card into a supermarket and get what you need. So a single mother of two would have access to $60 to $90 a day and she could go to the supermarket and we wouldn't have these food lines. What can we do to get some of this stimulus money applied towards SNAP so that these mothers out here and these single parents or these families out here, mothers and fathers, are not worried about feeding their children?
That's right, Byron. And to your point, one in five mothers in America is describing her children under the age of 12 as being hungry.
Yes.
We are in the midst of a hunger crisis in America. And by the way, this hunger crisis was knocking on our door before this pandemic struck and
That's
has
right.
been magnified during the course of this pandemic. So we've been fighting as Democrats in these COVID relief bills, the last one and fighting for it in the next one called the HEROES Act, to expand SNAP benefits by at least 15%. And people know SNAP benefits, that's about food stamps. It's about helping people who are hungry feed their family.
That's right.
And we've had resistance to it. We keep fighting. We tried to get it in the last one and the Republicans stood in the way.
Yes.
And so we're going to fight for it to get in the next one. But this is where we always have to recognize elections matter, because right now the Democrats do not control the Senate. And so when we start to fight for this next relief package that came out of the democratically controlled House of Representatives, which is the HEROES Act, we're going to be fighting tooth and nail to try and get an expansion of things like SNAP benefits. And that's why I'd ask people to pay attention to everything that's happening in D.C., but pay attention to these Senate races, because if we can take back the majority in the United States Senate, then we won't be having a conversation that is so basic, like whether it is the government's responsibility to help mothers and fathers feed their children when they're unable.
That's right. And out of $4 trillion, we should be able to get at least $10 billion applied to SNAP. That changes everything.
Right. And the part of what I'm fighting for is to say, and I'm working with Ed Markey and Bernie Sanders on this. I have a bill that basically says during the course of the pandemic, there should be recurrent monthly payments to folks instead of just that one check of $1,200 that was months ago.
That's right.
That we should be giving recurrent payments, because people have their bills they got to pay every month. And right now we have tens of millions of people who were newly out of work.
Yes.
And we need to help folks not fall deeply through the cracks, because when this is over, we need people to be able to get back on their feet. And it is only right that we will help them get through this crisis that is not of their make, including recurrent monthly payments. And again, I'm fighting for $2,000 a month, recurrent payments until we get through the pandemic.
Perfect. And also, I think it's important that we participate in the census. We
That's
have
right.
got to participate, especially as Black people, in the census, because that right there will determine where about $1.5 trillion will flow or not flow in and out of our communities. And we have until October 31st to apply and to be a part of the census. And the other note I want to share, you talked about we have to participate all the way through. As Black people, we have got to do three things. Number one, we have got to register to vote.
Yes.
Number two, we have to vote. And number three, we have to vote early. We cannot vote like we're white people on Tuesday, November 3rd. If you show up on Tuesday, November 3rd, they're going to tell you after 8 hours, you're in the wrong place. We have to go. Most states will allow us to vote 3 to 4 days early. And those are the days we have to vote.
Byron, that's right. And I have a bill. I'm proposing what I call the Vote Safe Act, which would give billions of dollars to the states to encourage them to put in place vote by mail for those states that don't have it. Because to your point, vote early, that there would be early voting at least 20 days before the election so people can do it around their own schedule and not stand in line, like you said, for hours and hours on election day. And also for folks who insist on going to the polls, have safe voting. So have things like curbside voting. But one of the things that in particular we need to stress to our folks is this. The last big events that I did before the pandemic struck was to be walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge with our heroes like John Lewis and members of the CBC. And we were there to commemorate Bloody Sunday, which was that day over 50 years ago when Black blood bled on the bridge as folks were marching for our right to vote. And so one of the things that we have as a tradition is we like to go to the polls on Election Day because that's our expression of honoring our ancestors. We like to bring the kids.
Malik.
We take pictures. We have souls to the polls. We have whole traditions around going to the polls to vote on Election Day. But here's what I want to say. We can honor the ancestors by voting by mail. And so let's remember that the most important thing that they want for us is that we actually vote. And so let's encourage people to vote by mail, to be safe, to do it early, and in that way, make sure that our voices are heard.
Senator Harris, you know, we've seen headline after headline talk about the disproportionate impact of COVID on the Black community. Yes. And the same with maternal mortality.
That's
we were
right.
just talking about this. We've published at least two stories of Black mothers dying within the past week. And so it's awareness is not an issue. People are aware that this is the issue, and yet we're still having this issue. Can you talk about the bill that you've proposed to implement anti-racism in training in the medical profession so we can address this issue?
I will. And I'll tell you, my partner on that on the House side is Alma Adams, who also together with Lauren Underwood, we have partnered together on the Black maternal mortality issue, because to your point, Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die in connection with childbirth than white women. And when you scratch the surface, you don't have to scratch too deeply to figure out that it has nothing to do with her education level. It has nothing to do with her socioeconomic level. You remember Serena and her experience? It literally has to do with her race. It literally has to do with the fact that when a Black woman walks into that clinic or doctor's office, she is not taken as seriously. So similarly, on this issue, I'm offering, and we are announcing it for the first time on GRIO, but we have our COVID-19 Bias and Anti-Racism Training Act. And basically it is this. It is recognizing that in the midst of COVID-19, like many other public health issues, Black folks are not receiving the same kind of treatment that others receive. There are plenty of studies that are telling us that, for example, we need to train physicians and health professionals to recognize that when they are condescending to a patient, and in particular, a Black patient, and use that kind of tone, one, it is going to make that person believe that they're not being heard, but also believe that this is not a system they can trust. We are finding that in terms of the amount of time that a physician spends with their patient, that there is a real difference based on race, and that they spend shorter periods of time with their Black patients or their brown patients. We're finding that, for example, there needs to be training on having language assistants for whom English is a second language so that they can fully benefit. Because across the board, Black folks, Latinos, Native Americans, what we are finding is that they are having the worst experiences in the healthcare system, not to mention they come into it with higher rates of pre-existing condition because of other forms of systemic racism and bias. And then during COVID-19, that they are not actually receiving the best of what the medical profession can offer. So all of that to say, I'm proposing that what we do is we recognize it, we speak the truth about it, and then we deal with it. And deal with it in a number of ways that include also training of healthcare professionals around their bias and the need then for them to recognize it if they want the health outcomes that they believe are important. Because, for example, one of the things we find is bias in how they think a Black patient, for example, may follow their instructions around a healthcare protocol. Right? A bias, believing or thinking that that patient is any less likely to adhere to the instructions they receive, right? Like there are biases in every component of this system, and it is having real health consequences. And so that's part of what I'm proposing as we deal with it.
And it's so powerful. I read actually your sister's op-ed about having lupus, because I have lupus too. And I could relate to being a Black woman, right? And trying to be competent, trying to, you know, juggle all of these things and then dealing with a medical system that treats you in that way. So, you know, what's interesting, Senator Harris, is that we did an interview with you last year where we talked about some of these race-focused policies. And I feel like there was a portion of your interview that was removed from context and it was shared on the internet, in which I asked about reparations. And, you know, you mentioned the LIFT Act. You said that basically this is something that would benefit everyone. But people took that part where you said, I'm not going to do something specifically only for Black America. And some people took that with offense. Do you think you were misunderstood? Do you regret saying that? I'm just interested in your reaction to that, because I think people may have interpreted
that. I don't remember the exact words, but I will tell you where I am and where I've always been. There are very specific issues that impact Black people in America, which we know have historical context, and the history goes back to 400 years. And for all of those reasons, there are specific issues in terms of the history of slavery, Jim Crow laws, lynching is something I've been dealing with. I mean, we can go on and on and on. Systemic legal racism and bias and prejudice in America that has resulted in specific experiences and disparity and injustice for and to Black people in America. And I've always worked on addressing that, and I will continue to work on addressing it. It is why I'm proposing the Justice and Policing Act, knowing that Black men in particular are multiple times more likely to be killed at the hands of a police officer, Black unarmed men. That is why I am proposing what we do around requiring accountability and consequence for police officers who break the rules and break the law. It is why I am proposing the Racial Disparities Act, which says that the federal government has got to collect data based on race so that we can be equipped with the actual numbers supported by what we are already experiencing to advocate that the resources will go where they are needed. Because I am particularly concerned in the midst of this pandemic that there is not the right distribution of resources based on need when it comes to things like PPEs, when it comes to things like testing, when it comes to things like treatment, and when it will invariably come to the distribution of a vaccine. I'm very concerned about that. I'm looking at what we need to do around issues like, and I've been a leader in the United States Senate on Black maternal mortality for exactly what we have already talked about, which is Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die in connection with childbirth. So my record speaks for itself, but there is no question that this is a moment in time during the course of these crises that has put under a microscope what already were these longstanding disparities. And thankfully, at least some people who were unaware are now becoming aware. But the moment really is not just to educate people about what we have known our entire lives. It's about doing something about it, acting on what we know to be disparities and injustices in America. And that's what I'm working on.
Right.
You know, so in this $4 trillion stimulus package, I think it would be very important for us as America to invest into the health care of Black America, the most vulnerable, so that we can address the pre-existing conditions that is having such an impact on our communities and the country. We should invest heavily, $500 billion, to make sure all Americans, especially African Americans, have the best healthcare. Right. What do you think we could do to make sure that we're getting $500 billion or so invested into the Black communities to make sure the healthcare is brought up to the level it needs to be? Because, and part of the reason we have such poor healthcare is this is all going back to 250 years of slavery.
400 years.
Right. 400 years of actual just oppression, but actual 250.
Well, because remember, before we were founded as a nation, there was slavery in America.
That's right.
1776.
That's right. You're right. So we do to invest $500 billion a year or whatever it is to make sure the healthcare is on parity with the rest of the nation. We're not so susceptible because this won't be the only pandemic. This will be the first of many pandemics. What happened in 1918 was an anomaly. This, and even the Pentagon said, we're going to have pandemics. And I can tell you, as the owner of the Weather Channel, the scientists there are some of the best. They will tell you we're going to have more events, and that's going to trigger more events like pandemics. Yeah. And we have to be prepared. And the only way to be prepared is we have to be very healthy. And I believe out of that $4 trillion, we need to invest more in the health of Americans, especially African Americans. What can you do to help us with that?
So that's why I am proposing the Racial Disparities Act, because we need to have the formula, right, to actually make sure that the resources go where they're needed. And right now, the federal government is not collecting the data like they should. I mean, it took the New York Times to basically sue the CDC to get the racial data on who has been affected by COVID most recently. They're not giving it up. And this is what I've been fighting for in the Senate for a while now. And so basically, I'm proposing this act that will require the federal government to collect and then share data about racial disparities around the impact of this virus and the need also for resources in various communities based on race. Because if we don't collect the data, then we don't have the formula. When we know anecdotally that the communities that are suffering the most are communities of color and Black folks in particular. And so that's what we need to do, Byron. Because let me just tell you why this is so critically important, and we need to get it in this next bill. Because again, it's not only about present day around disparities we're seeing in who has PPEs, who has testing, right, who has treatment options and resources. But when the vaccine comes, and it will, hopefully sooner, and I pray sooner than later, it's not going to be in mass production. It is not going to be produced immediately for 330 million people. And so what is going to happen is, yet again, it's predictable that the people who have greatest access and power or wealth will have access to the vaccine first. What we want to make sure is that we have already put in place, by the time we have a vaccine, a formula for making sure that what is needed goes to those most in need.
Yes.
And that's why we need to push for the Racial Disparities Act to be in place immediately so that we can, again, respond to the need as opposed to responding to the people in power.
That's right. How do we help you achieve these goals? What do we need to do? We have over 10 million monthly active users. You can talk to a lot of people. How do we help you? Because this isn't you. This is we. This is us. Yeah. So how do we help you accomplish what we need to accomplish today?
Talk to you. And I know that those millions of viewers and followers live all over the country. Lobby, talk to your members of Congress, both your congressperson as well as your senators, and tell them to pass the Racial Disparities Act. Tell them to pass the Vote Safe Act. Tell them to pass the Anti-Racism Training Act. Tell them to pass the Save Our Street Act, which is going to save our small businesses, those with 10 and fewer employees, which are predominantly Black-owned businesses. Tell them to pass the HEROES Act. Tell folks that you know, your relatives, your friends, the folks that you worship with, to vote, to register to vote. We need to take back the Senate, and we need to elect Joe Biden to the White House.
And we will post all of that at the GRIO. So we'll take that entire list.
Great.
Participate in the census. We have to vote from top to bottom, even through legislation. We got to vote. Legislators, we have to vote from top to bottom.
Well, this is the perfect note to end on. We do have to wrap. But Senator Harris, as I said, you are holding it down as the only Black woman senator right now. We know you're no stranger to first. You, the first woman of color to be Attorney General of California, other firsts. Our question for you is, beyond a symbolic victory, what would it mean for there to be a woman vice president in the White House, particularly a woman of color? Just to speak to that generally, beyond symbolic victories, what does it mean to have someone who can advocate in that way?
So the reality of it is that these offices are the offices of decision makers. The people who hold these offices make decisions that impact the lives of millions, hundreds of millions of people. And it is critical that the decision makers reflect the experiences, the culture, the circumstance, the background of the people who are impacted. And right now, that's not where we are. And we've not ever been there. It is something that we have to continuously fight toward, which is making sure that we have a government that reflects the people who are being governed, because that's the only way we're going to ensure that the decisions will actually be relevant to the people. And when I say the people, I mean all the people. We have to have a government that is for the people and by the people and of the people, period.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Senator Harris, I just want to say you are my president, and thank you, Madam President.
Byron,
thank you, Madam
just
President.
Starting some stuff. Thank you.
Senator Harris, I played by the rules, okay? You see,
did.
I followed the rules.
I know you
did. Byron's the boss. He does what he wants. So you're the president. There you
That's go. It. President Harris, thank you. Amen.
Please be well, and thank you for all you do, both of you. Natasha, it was great to be with you. Thank
That's
you.
That's a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right, GRIO fam, you heard it right here on Dear Culture. Change we can expect and fight for from our VP nominee, Senator Kamala Harris. Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you share it with everyone you know. Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcasts@thegrio.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The GRIO, an executive produced by Blue Talusma and co-produced by Kyrie Williams, Sundis Hassan, and Kevin Y. Brown.